Welcome to Hungry in Nashville. May I take your order?
2 sweet teas, please.
Got it. Coming right up.
Thanks for stopping by today. I want to tell you about Kent Taylor, and the man is absolutely crazy about beer. He's co-founder of Blackstone Brewery, but it's not the beer I want to talk to you about. It's about how they built their production brewery. I'm Jim Grinstead, and I'm hungry in Nashville. Let's eat. Okay, let me fill you in on the craft brewing marketplace. The Brewers Association, which represents small brewers, says overall U.S. beer volume sales were down 1% in 2018, whereas craft brewer sales continued to grow at a rate of 4% by volume, reaching 13.2% of the U.S. beer market by volume. Craft production grew the most for microbreweries. Retail dollar sales of craft beer increased 7% to $27.6 billion and now accounts for more than 24% of the $114 billion U.S. beer market. 24% ain't bad. The number of microbreweries grew each year until 2018, and that was the first pullback since 2010. Here in Tennessee, the number of craft breweries has continued to increase, with 183,000 barrels produced in 2018. There are about 100 craft brewers in the state. Then there are the brew pubs. There were 2,252 brew pubs in the United States in 2017, and just over 100 in Tennessee. There's a difference between opening a production brewery and a brew pub, even though some production facilities have tap rooms.
1994, we opened Blackstone Restaurant and Brewery on West End in Nashville, and it was built as a brew pub. Really, from the beginning of the brew pub, we wanted to have a production brewery, because at a brew pub, you have to go to the brew pub in order to get the beer. In a production brewery, you can send it out. And so, you know, one thing or another, we procrastinated, and finally we just said, you know, we're either going to do it or quit talking about it. Really, in 2008 is when we really started in earnest to do that. We got our financing, closed on the real estate in December of 2009, spent 2010 organizing, getting contractors, building the building, and then we opened in 2011, opened our production brewery. So in 94, I built the brew pub, or was involved in building the brew pub brewery, and then in 2010, 2011, we built the production brewery. So it's two different kinds of breweries, and they're very different on what's required when you build them as to what your focus is. On a brew pub, or now the big thing is a brewery tap room. And brewery tap rooms and brew pubs are very similar in the design and the requirements. So in a tap room brewery or a brew pub, most, if not all of it, is served on site. So you can daily check and follow the quality of the beer. When you can do that, it pulls a lot of the requirements out of the process. You're not nearly as concerned about a lot of things, because if there's a problem, you know it, you can pull the beer off. We did this all the time at the brew pub. We would have a piece of equipment, say that would a seal would go bad on a pump, start sucking air, it would oxidize the beer. Oxidized beers will only last a couple or 3 weeks. So we, you know, after a couple of weeks, we'd start picking up something in a beer. We'd trace back through, and sure enough, we had a problem. We'd fix it, but we'd have to dump the beer. Of course, you don't like to do that, but from a quality standpoint, that's the way to approach it.
Order up.
Since the brew pub closed, I'm going to focus primarily on the production facility and its tap room. That said, when the brew pub opened, they hired a brewmaster to handle production, then he moved to the production facility when it got up and going. Kent developed his interest in the technical side of brewing when he was coming up with his own home brew.
I come from a home brewing background, so certainly that, and then at the brew pub, I continued to be involved in the brewing. I gained that experience, and it's important to have that experience when you're designing a brewery. You need to have a really good foundation, which I see as is a real issue with a lot of breweries today, where in reality, to become a qualified brewmaster is a 10 to 15 year apprenticeship. Oh, it is. Let me tell you, if it were easy, everybody could do it. And I mean, everybody's trying to do it, but not everybody's making good beer. And, you know, when you look at it from our approach, I mean, it was important to brew good beer. And we hired a qualified brewmaster when we opened our brew pub. So that was certainly very important to us. But, you know, again, you learn a lot when you're doing it. And so, the more we operated, the more we ran a brewery, the more we realized how important it is to do it correctly. And so when it came to designing and building our production brewery, we didn't have a lot of money. I mean, we were on a budget. But again, our focus was, what do we have to spend in order to make consistent quality beer? And that's where our bar was set. So it wasn't, we didn't set it at how much money can we raise and then what can we get for how much money we have. You know, we went from the approach, this is what it's going to take, and this is how much money we need to have. Well, I mean, certainly scalability is something that we took, yes. Again, the brew pub, you have four walls, you know what you have, that's what you sell. The more butts you can get in seats, the more beer you can sell. But we're not talking about huge needs for expansion because it's all sold on premise. In a production standpoint, yeah, I mean, scalability is very important. Oddly enough, when you look at the perception is, since I can make it in my kitchen at home, the barrier to entry is not very high. But in reality, what it takes to build a brewery that will produce consistent quality beer is substantially more than most people realize.
As part of my research, I read that running a brewery is 90% cleaning and 10% paperwork. I got a chuckle out of Kent. Building a production brewery has a different focus. It involves lots of planning and decisions. For example, will the brewery sell only kegs, or will it have its own canning and bottling line? My research suggested it would take an investment of about $2 million for the brewery and packaging. Bottling and canning lines are really expensive.
It depends on what we're talking about. Are we talking about a brewery tap room where all of it is sold on site? Reasonable, depending on what you build it out. Those you have to consider your retail space, because you want people to feel comfortable. You want them to be there. So you're going to spend some non-brewing money in those kind of things. But when you're talking actually at the brewery, I mean, you know, $500,000 to $1 million is probably about right for an on-premise type of a facility.
Order up.
The choice of equipment is important, and the tanks from the brew pub just weren't going to cut it. That understanding comes from experience and seeing other small breweries make their own mistakes. When those mistakes are made, used equipment comes up for sale.
Sometimes you've got breweries that outgrow their equipment, so that's available for sale. More times than not, what you have is a brewery that failed. Well, are you buying those problems, those production problems, with that poorly designed equipment when you're buying this used equipment? I mean, I know of a brewery that really close to them, really good folks. They bought a failed brewery and operated it for, I don't know, a year, year and a half, and it's now closed. They didn't know enough to identify that there was maybe some equipment problems. But again, I want to get back to, if you're going to do an on-premise, which is brewery tap room, it's just basically a big homebrew system. Because, you know, hopefully you're moving your beer fairly quickly. You know, the one mistake that some people make is they buy too big a system. And so, you know, my tip for anybody my tip for anybody in any brewing, if it's a new, I'm talking about new brewery as opposed to an expansion, is plan on brewing less beer more often and not more beer less often. Beer is just like milk. It's going to go bad. It has a longer shelf life than milk, but not as much as most people think. Properly made beer, made in a $10 million brewery, should last 3 to 4 months. Beer made in a $500,000 brewery is probably going to last 3 to 4 weeks, depending on how it's set up. Now, you can get longer life if you're really aware and you really watch what you're doing. You can get a longer life out of it, but it's always going to be shorter.
Kent believes in brewing less beer more often because it allows the brewmaster to brew better beer and catch problems that may affect the taste. Sometimes a problem may mean tossing hundreds of gallons of beer down the drain. Now, no brewer wants to pour beer out, but if it doesn't meet Kent's standards, he's more than willing to do it and doesn't cry over spilled beer.
Not really. From my point of view, it does not. The feeling that I get is, whew, we dodged a bullet. We found out about it. Our quality controls, our quality assurance worked. We found out it before it got out in the beyond our control, and we're able to deal with it. And by dealing with it, I mean we give it to Metro Water and Sewer Department. So that's, to me, it's a relief, and it's not, I don't cry over it. I mean, I cry over it if it somehow got out.
I assumed brewers must have labs to make consistent product, but it turns out most of them don't spend the money, and the health inspectors don't care, because no pathogens can live in beer. Although he's been brewing for quite a while, Kent believes there are plenty of things to learn, and he doesn't miss an opportunity to visit another brewery. It puzzles him why more brewers don't stop by to see his operation. Blackstone has won a lot of awards for its beer and has a great reputation in the industry, but it's rare for another brewer to drop by and look for fresh ideas. As I said, he never misses a chance to learn from someone else, and that's what happened when he visited Colorado and got the chance to visit Odell's brewery.
I learned a ton of stuff walking through that brewery, seeing how someone else does it, how they solve a particular problem, you know, picking the brains of my buddy, and why other people don't do that on a wholesale basis, I don't know. But it doesn't seem to happen that much, like this is an invitation. So, you know, there is a point at which you got to be a little bit careful, but I take any and every opportunity to get in a brewery. I was at the same summit, and I will use pretty much any method to do this. So Jeff Larson is the owner of Alaskan Brewing, and he was at the technical summit, and he and Dave Wilson, who's his one of the head guys at the brewery. Since it's Alaska, it's hard. So they weren't flying out the same day. And neither was I, because I was going to stay and do some nosing around. And I've always wanted to get into Avery, which Avery's got a great tour thing. You can see everything. It's very, very immersive in their facility. But I didn't want that. I wanted down on the floor.
So to wrap up, Kent has been working for 35 years, pouring a lot of his profit into buying the best ingredients and building a quality brewery. What concerns him most is the competition from people who shouldn't be in the brewing business.
So the net result is we're turning off a lot of customers. I mean, people that are coming into the industry are having some marginal to bad beer, and we're turning them off. So ultimately, we are going to compromise probably a natural growth pattern to any reasonable business, which all that means is we're going to get back to that. Because all of this fluff, all of this big stuff that we've had based on everybody wanting to get into it's going to evaporate and go away, and we'll be back to where we should have been to begin with.
Anything else? Okay, come back soon.
Hungry in Nashville is brought to you by Out of My Pocket Productions and is copyrighted 2019 by me, Jim Grinstead. You can listen to Hungry in Nashville on our website, hungryinnashville.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Facebook or enter your email address on the website so you'll be notified when new episodes are posted. But the best thing you can do to support the podcast is tell your friends about it and encourage them to subscribe. And if you have an idea for something you'd like to hear, don't be shy. Send it to idea@hungryinnashville.com. Thanks for listening, and may you eat well.